Hi, everybody, and welcome to At the Devil's Ball, the podcast where we talk about horror and genre films in a positive and constructive manner. I am Nathaniel.
And I'm Samuel.
And we are the all singing, all dancing crap of the world. we are starting off a party like it's 1999.
Right.
Which was your idea. Mm-hmm. Which was your idea for next month. And then when I looked up movies made in 1999, I was like, oh, let's just do 2 months of it because there's so much great stuff that actually happened in 99. Which I didn't even track when you were like, you know, 1999. I'm like, all right, is that a big year? I didn't think that much happened in 1999. But it turns out a lot happened in 1999. And we're going to start off with one of my favorite films of all time. Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
In 1999, based on the novel by Chuck Palahniuk. Before we jump into that, what'd you watch this week? Anything?
I watched Late Night with the Devil on Shudder. That was really good. It's kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a faux documentary or a found footage film or whatever. It's kind of like in that vein where, you know, it's an old talk show from 1977 where they do an exorcism on a kid. No, they don't do an exorcism. They just have a kid who's possessed on the show. That's right. They don't try to exorcise it or anything. They just, you know, showing him for views. Starring David Dastmalchian, I think is how you pronounce his name.
Yeah, or Dastmalchian.
Yeah,
I never actually got it. I love
that guy. He's right. He's good in everything, and he's you know, in those horror documentaries like In Search of Darkness, he's usually like one of the talking heads in there. So like he's a fan of the genre, so I'm a fan of his.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty good. The third act goes maybe a little bit too broad, I think. A little bit, they kind of like, you know, overpower the possessed person has too many powers than maybe the third act, but it's fine. You know, it's a fun film.
Yeah.
It's worth the price of admission, and it's, you know, worth the good things that people have been saying about it. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. This is a controversial film. Obviously it made the rounds for having AI art in it.
Yeah, it only had it in like a couple of little places, like the interstitials, like the "we'll be right back" kind of signs. I'm not really that concerned about it for this film because it was like, you know, this low budget thing. Like,
yeah, you know, but they could have
found somebody. But yeah, you know, I'm not as mad about it as if it was like you know, Warner Brothers making this thing, or you know, that's, it's like, you know, okay, maybe they just didn't have the budget to do this one thing, and they, you know, caved and did I would have just not did it, you know, just not have the interstitials, and because when they go to commercial, they cut to a different kind of, you know, film stock, and they cut to black and white, and you see the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and they could have just not had the "we'll be right back," you know, thing play, and just, you know, cut straight to that thing.
Yeah, I did see a couple people point out, like, they were like, you know, there are artists out there who were like, I would have done that for $20 and a credit in the film. And it would have been a dream job, and like, you know, but you used AI art. But I just haven't seen it because I don't have Shudder anymore.
Right.
But and I didn't, you know, I haven't had the money to go to the movies. I know it's been said, mostly people have been saying good things. I know a couple people, friends of mine who have, and some of whom have been on the show, who didn't particularly care for it, but but at some point I'll probably end up checking it out. But
it was nice. It didn't really break its own rules that much, which is one of the things with found footage films, you know, that you always run into where, you know, movie breaks its own rules. But this one, you know, kept pretty consistent, and you know, there was a reason for everybody to continue, you know, filming, and, you know, while things get weirder and weirder. But yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
How about you? What'd you get into?
Oh, I've done a lot of stuff this week. I guess the big one, I mean, it's not a new watch, but I watched Apocalypse Now, the Apocalypse Now Redux version, for the first time in a long time. And it's a phenomenal film, and we should cover it sometime, but because it's actually a terrifying film.
It really
But
is.
yeah, it's a scary, scary fucking movie. But yeah, the thing that I kind of keyed in on this time was like the deterioration of Willard's like cohorts down the river, is really what's sort of hammering home the horror of the scenario. Like he's got the young kid, the surfer, who's like losing his mind, but it's never really pointed out much. It's just sort of like he's in the background, like, you know, like painting a dog. It's like nobody knows why he's doing it. You know, and it's like by the end he's just sort of like half catatonic, and it's really but it's an absolute genius film. I mean, it's
Oh,
such a yeah, it's such an amazing picture. And that movie's like 4 hours long, and it doesn't feel 4 hours long. I was watching it being like, oh, I'm totally into this thing, and it's really long, but I'm not.
Unlike last night when
I
I was watching, I was watching the Attack of the Clones, and then, every time I watch that movie, it feels like they packed another 20 minutes on for the last time I watched
No, that movie, yeah,
it.
and we're obviously, yeah,
We're going to be for
that's coming
talking
up,
about
but
it.
yeah, that's coming up. But for our May the 4th episode, which last year we did, Phantom Menace. And do you think Attack of the Clones was worse than Phantom Menace? Or
I think the series gets worse as it goes along, yeah.
okay, really? So you think Revenge of the Sith is worse than Phantom Menace?
Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow, though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When we record it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
So I
Apocalypse
mean,
Now,
like,
sorry.
yeah. No, it's totally. No, it's yeah. Stay tuned for that, guys. But yeah, the so 1999. What gave you that idea?
Just that I was, seeing a bunch of Facebook things about oh, it's been, the 25th anniversary of, The Mummy was this year, and the Matrix was this year, and I'm like, kind of like you, like were like, I went and looked up, 1999, and I thought that it was like just a huge year for like big movies,
Yeah.
and important, culturally important movies. So I'm like, yeah, let's, we can do,
Yeah.
four of these easy,
Yeah. And now we're going to do eight of them.
now we're doing eight, and it's still
Yeah.
easy.
Yeah. And all of them game changers except I guess arguably one. But which we'll get to later on in the next 2 months. But yeah, Fight Club.
Seven huge films in,
Yeah. Yeah. Good or
one
bad, they
year.
were, you know, and not necessarily game changing, not necessarily in good ways. But all of them are really big moments in the shift. Were needle movers at the very least. They were shifting things cinematically. But we'll get to that. So do you want to do the vitals on Fight Club, and we'll jump into this?
Fight Club was released in 1999, as we said. Written by Chuck Palahniuk, and I'm sorry, based on his novel, and sorry, yeah, and Jim Ohl's. Sorry, my thing had to refresh.
Sorry, should we point out that you're still on your tablet like you were last time?
I'm still on my
Yeah.
tablet. I'm still, using.
So,
I feel like I'm stuck in the wilderness.
yeah. You sound like you're stuck in the wilderness. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have that nice fancy microphone that you got me,
Yeah. Did I get you the microphone?
Yeah, you bought me the microphone when we
Oh,
started.
shit. I did?
And I
I
thank you
don't even
for it.
remember that. Yeah, I don't even remember that. All right, cool. No, you're welcome, I guess. All right.
But
Yeah.
starring Brad Pitt as Tyler Durden, Edward Norton as the narrator, Meatloaf as Robert Paulson, Helena Bonham Carter as Marla, and Jared Leto as a piece of ground beef.
Boo.
Yeah, boo to Jared Leto.
Buried
And
Jared Leto.
I think we discussed this on the show before, but like for a long time, I was never able to retain any knowledge of Jared Leto. Even, seeing movies with him in it, I would forget immediately that he was in it. And
I had
up
totally
until
forgotten he was in this until I started watching it.
up until he did, the Joker and, that terrible goddamn movie. Like I never could retain that memory of watching him in anything, even including this film, which I watched, a thousand times.
Yeah.
And he's still like, oh yeah, that is Jared Leto every time, But other than that, everybody's just kind of small characters. Other than that, there's anyone that I missed that you wanted to call out?
Well, we talked about him when we did Alien 3. I forget his name. He was in all of his films.
Right.
Obviously, of course, this
The
IMDb
Manhunter.
is IMDb.
Holt McCallany. Yep.
And then did you mention David Fincher, the director? Yeah.
I
But
don't remember. It's been a
okay,
long day.
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, but yeah, that's okay. Been for me too. But yeah, David Fincher directed. And then the effects were done by
Robotine.
Rob Bottin again.
Yep.
We talked about l literally last episode, he did Basic Instinct.
Yeah.
And I think that we should probably give a shout out to honestly the Duss Brothers
Right.
for a really interesting score, which we'll talk a bit
Yeah.
about. And I want to find the name of the cinematographer because he did a fucking phenomenal job in this film.
And a call out to the Pixies for one of the best needle drops in the cinema.
No, I agree. I totally agree
Yep.
with that. Yeah. Let's see. The cinematography was done by Jeff Cronenwith.
Okay.
And then film editor James Haygood. This movie is so well
Oh,
designed.
yeah.
And put together. So yeah, that's kind of the big movers and shakers. So Fight Club. I remember I'm very fond of this film, and part of the reason why I'm so fond of this film is this came out, I mean, 99, I was 18. I turned 18, getting ready to
Right.
graduate high school. And I've pointed out before when we did Mulholland Drive, that was the movie that sort of changed things for me, where I realized not just that I was a lover of film, but that I wanted to kind of study film. I kind of wanted to understand it
Right.
and analyze it and digest it. But along that journey, those couple of years, probably starting in 96, 97, was
Right.
when I was really getting into film. I had moved beyond just the mainstream hits and started doing, David Lynch and Tarantino and, who of course I loved Tarantino when I was 17. I don't really care much for him now. But Fight Club was one of
I still
those.
like his films, but he's overindulgent. Sorry.
No, I agree.
Right, go on.
No,
Yep.
no, no. But yeah, so Fight Club was one of those movies that I went and saw in the theaters, and it kind of blew my mind.
Right.
It was a big, like I said, I hadn't really hit that moment didn't come until Mulholland Drive, but Fight Club was one of those movies that was sort of pulling at part of my brain,
Yeah,
being
yeah.
like there's something changing in young Nathaniel's brain, and Fight Club was part of
Right
that.
on.
And there was a time where I really really loved Brad Pitt too. I guess I still kind of do. I mean, he's still,
Yeah, still puts in solid performances.
normally, yeah. Speaking of self-indulgent, I mean, Pitt's a little bit,
Right.
has become kind of that guy, but generally, I guess, known to be fairly amiable in general. But I saw this film and was like, yep, he's great. Coming off of Interview with the Vampire and Seven.
Right.
And so like this thing was like a big deal, but it wasn't a super successful picture, mainstream wise. I don't think it made a lot of money.
I'm looking now. Go
Yeah.
on.
Yeah. But yeah, it was successful for me, and it was successful. I mean, I went and saw it with a friend, and
It did 101 million on a $63 million budget. So,
yeah, okay. That's fairly successful. Yeah.
yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. And then I know it wasn't when we're going to talk about the reaction to the film, even today. But yeah, that's kind of where I was coming from. Like that's, Fight Club was this really kind of formative movie, for me when I, and then I watched it last night, and then I watched it again tonight, which I haven't done for many of our films, but I did for this one. Normally, if I watch the film again, it's like a commentary track or something like that. This time, I just watched it twice, because I really loved it again. I watched it
You want to
last
soak in
night.
that.
Yeah, I watched it last night and was just like, "Oh my God, this is I'm like loving this film." And I feel like the film's power with me kind of waxed and waned. Like it was a huge deal when I was 18, and then I liked it for a few years, and I feel like it kind of fell away a little bit for a while. And then we're like, we're gonna do it. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna throw on Fight Club again. I pull out my special edition Blu-ray with the Deadpool cover that I got when Deadpool came out, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna watch this. And I was just like, just mesmerized by this picture. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. That I came home from work today and was like, you know what? I'm gonna watch the movie again, and I threw it
I
on.
mean, it's one of the top directors at the top of this game. I don't think I'm overspeaking by calling it a masterpiece of his. It's just that good on his.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that made seven too, so he's got two huge, almost flawless films in
Yeah.
his repertoire.
In the
I
game
know
before
when
that.
I'm Yeah, in the game,
Yeah.
which was,
Really good too. Yeah.
little less successful, but it was really, really well done.
Yeah.
I came into this watching, being a fan of David Fincher's from like The Game and Seven, and even Alien 3, because I liked the style of Alien 3. I liked the
Right.
way it was directed, when he was allowed to direct. We've already discussed that, so I was looking forward to this film, and like, I'll be honest, the first time I watched it, the second half of the film kind of went over my head a little bit. I'm like, why did it go so, broad with it all of a sudden? And then the second watch I watched, watched it, I got it, and it was like, immediately became one of my favorite films, because it's just, so ahead of its time, and it really, in a lot of bad ways, predicted, where we would be at in a couple of years.
That's pretty shocking, yeah.
It's, and we're at it now, and not that I think it was, necessarily all, being prognostication. I mean, who was talking about the society around him at the time, but as far as, the incels and the Boogaloo boys and the what have you, Project Mayhem people, who are, absolutely terrible, terrorists
Yeah.
and foul people being everywhere.
Yeah.
Really, like, predicted that kind of stuff. And it's funny that, the same people who were, predicted by this film are super into the film for the wrong reasons.
It's a wildly misinterpreted film, and it re somehow remains that, even now.
Well,
If you're
this is one of the litmus test films where, oh, you like, cool, you like Fight Club. Why?
Yeah. Well,
And it'll tell you whether this person's worth talking to or not.
Tyler Durden's on that list with like Rick Sanchez and Patrick Bateman. The if you're idolizing this person, you're doing it wrong. But what's funny is not only does that crowd misinterpret the film as they misinterpret it as being for them, the people that don't like those men, also misinterpret the film as being for those
Right.
people. There's
Right.
still a huge contingent of people that think this movie is on the side of like incels and
Right.
men's rights activists, and it is
Yeah.
not.
No.
Not even a little. We're gonna talk a little bit more about that because our friend oh my God. It's very late, guys. Very
Yeah,
late.
sorry.
And I have been up since been up for a long, long time now. Mark,
Mark?
our friend
Okay.
Mark, was had been shown an interest in being in this episode. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it. It's too late.
Right.
But he told me that there is a comic book continuation of Fight Club,
Yes.
and he,
There's like a two and a three.
yeah, and he sent me we had a little bit of a back and forth on instant message that he gave me permission to kind of read from, which we'll get to,
Right.
but he kind of summarized that for me. But I guess like the main point of the continuation is Chuck Palahniuk kind of clarifying some things,
Right.
kind of being like, no, Tyler is not the good guy.
Right.
He is not your your hero.
Right. Kind of
He's
similar to the Messiah, where it's the sequel is reiterating the point that this is not the dude.
You're not supposed to really like Paul Atreides.
Right.
He's a bit of a fascist. But I was thinking about it before we get into that, and what Mark was telling me. My takeaway this time, watching it from that lens and watching it from the lens of 2024, and in a world that's filled with just recently, I think it was Michael Ian Black, the comedian. I think he was in Kids in the Hall.
That's the state.
That's the State. Okay. Michael
Yep.
Ian Black was in the State. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, I follow him on Twitter, but I but he posted something recently about, I think this was like last week. There was some big convention for men's rights or what have you. The Andrew Tate,
Right.
what's that other asshole there? The poorly dressed guy that apparently is the height of fashion.
I got nothing on.
Yeah, I don't know. He cries a lot. I don't remember his name. Jordan
Right.
Peterson.
Jordan Peterson, yeah.
Jordan Garbage Bag Peterson.
Right.
By the way, if you are listening to this episode in hopes that we will be on the side of all of that, I you
Yeah,
are in the
you're
wrong
listening to the wrong
classroom.
show.
Yeah, you're in the
Yeah.
wrong classroom.
And just go fuck yourself.
Or just sort your fucking life out, mate. But
Right.
yes, the but anyway, I guess there was this big thing, big convention for that. And Michael Ian Black pointed out, and he took some flack for this, but I think he was onto something, which is he's like, maybe what we should be looking at is the reason this exists is because we are at an unprecedented level of men feeling vulnerable.
Right.
They are uncomfortable, they are afraid. Like, how do we communicate with them? He took some heat to that, where people are like, how
Right.
dare you like sympathize with this? And he's like, but no, seriously, there isn't this indicative of a problem
Yeah, and
that,
we should be able to off ramp, people who aren't, completely in the bag yet, at least.
But the point is that, and I think that the reason why I bring that up is because I think it ties so heavily into what makes not only makes Fight Club a powerful allegory for that, but also why it's so misinterpreted.
Right.
Because Fight Club at its heart, I think, is a movie that's mostly just about lonely people who need a friend,
Right.
and they can't figure that out. And so they are so alone and isolated and scared and sad that they are willing to latch on to a appealing but toxic personality. And that's and the reason why that's so effective, and that's what like Michael Ian Black was saying, which was we live at a point in our modern historical moment is you have a bunch of men who are seeing social change and are worried that there's no place for them in that world. And so they are willing to so they go looking for answers from toxic men who tell them, well, no, the problem is them, not you. You know, rather than try to find a way to coexist within that world, you need to fight back against it. You need to tear it down. And so you've got all these young men who are afraid of the future, who are willing to listen to Andrew Tate and Jordan Peterson, both of whom are going progressively more insane, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They're not even making sense anymore. I think Andrew
No.
Tate just went viral for saying it's gay to kiss a woman that you love. It's really
Right.
weird. They're losing their minds, and it's really alarming. But my theory as to why this movie is so misinterpreted, where I'm going with all of this, is I think the movie, maybe unlike the book, because the book, and I was talking to Mark about this, where I was like, well, I don't remember the book that well, but I'm fairly certain one of the big fundamental difference between the book and the film was that the book is not subtle about Tyler Durden is a piece of shit. And Mark is like, no, it's clear as hell in the book that he's absolute trash. But the film is using a meta-textual narrative. And what it does is do too good a job at making Tyler appealing. And so, but what they're doing is showing us how
It's that whole
dangerous.
thing of, I look the way you want to look and I fuck the way you want to fuck. And, and that's, and to have Brad Pitt playing that character and, being, the sexiest he's ever looked, even if he looks like he needs a shower. It makes that character appealing even despite itself,
Yeah, it looks like you need to shower, and it looks like I need to get in the shower with him. I mean, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm hot for Tyler Durden. But my point is that the metatextual narrative, the way that it's set up, the way Pitt plays him, the way he's directed, the way this whole film is done, is to show you how dangerous Tyler is, because he is appealing. He is making sense early on. You know, the progression is, hey, lonely men, come join this support group, which is what it is. It's basically remaining men together, except that they punch each other instead of hug. But he's like, you can deal with your aggression, but you're also being supported. You're also, you know, gaining a sense of community from other men. And then and people are like, yay, that feels good. And then it's and but and then it's like, well, we're gonna start railing against capitalism and materialism. And you know, I'm like, yay, absolutely, let's do it. And but the thing is, he's making sense that whole time. He's pulling you in, and then it's like, well, let's go do terrorism. And by the time he's saying, let's go do terrorism, they're so in that they'll believe anything he says. And that's what makes him so dangerous, is that the first two acts of this film, you're kind of on Tyler's side. You're with him. You're like, yeah.
And that's where the film lost me the first time I watched it, was when it takes that turn into, Project Mayhem, being a terrorist group. And I'm like, whoa, wait, what, how did we get here? And, it just kind of blew my mind because I was, kind of passively watching it the first time I saw it at the theater. Then I went and saw it again, and I, more actively watched it and got the film, because I was just expecting, a fun punch for each other movie. Not this, treatise on, late stage capitalism and, how it leaves people behind, and how that
And
turns people into monsters.
how normal people can fall for a cult. You know, lonely people who don't know where they fit in the world, they go find a guy, a charismatic guy who tells them he's got answers. They don't even notice how toxic it is. You know, he's created this support group, but the thing is that ultimately that support is replaced by tearing down.
Yeah.
And but like if you use the analogy of say a house, you don't tear down, you can tear down a house, but the point of tearing down a house is to build something else on that space.
Right.
In Tyler's world, you just tear it down. It's a hole now.
Right. In the book, he because I just listened to the audiobook today. So
No, it's a quick, yeah, it's a quick read. Yeah.
yeah, it was like 5 hours,
Yeah.
and I
Oh.
listened to audiobooks at like 1.5, 2 times speed because my brain could process that. It's still better than reading. Listening better than reading at a quicker speed. So yeah, I listened to the audiobook today, and like the goal of Project Mayhem was to end society and build like a hunter-gatherer nation in its place.
Right.
So I guess there was a little bit of we're gonna build something, but it was something so ridiculous and so
But it's
bad
a
in
regression.
backwards, right? It's a regression
Yeah.
to what they think is a pure state. And if you talk to those kind of people today, like they'll still tell you the same thing, that we need to go back to hunter-gatherer style life, even though the reason we evolved the way we did is to not have to do that kind of shit.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're right, he does. Tyler's railing against all the things that are wrong with the world, and he's just coming to the wrong conclusion, because at the end of the day, he's a piece of shit and he doesn't care.
Well, he's not a person,
Right.
and that's sort of the key. And I think that's something that gets forgotten a lot, I think, is that part of the core difference between Tyler Durden and the narrator is the narrator has empathy for other people because he's a
Right.
person.
Right.
Tyler Durden was invented 6 months prior.
Yeah.
He's a figment of an imagination. He is
Right.
not a person. He's not one of us. He is an alien entity. And but no, I mean, but that's my theory as to why it's so misinterpreted so frequently is because, gosh, we sure do love Tyler in the first two acts of this
Right.
movie.
And the
And
fact that we've railed against it before, but people don't really have media literacy. It's
yeah.
they only take the surface level of the film, and they don't they don't confront or even think about what the film's trying to say at the end of the day, or what the subtexts are.
Yeah, in some ways, people just are going to see what they want to see, I think, when they look at
Right.
something like Fight Club. But I just think I think partially it is that the metatextual nature of the film is too successful.
Yeah.
And it creates a which is an odd.
The movie's too good for its own good,
Yeah, it's actually too well done. But at the same time, there is something to be said about, again, the difference between the book and the film. Also, Pitt is playing a character that has a little bit more depth to him
Right.
than the book, I think, offers.
Yeah.
Whereas the book is making it pretty clear. I mean, Polanik wanted to write a book about cults for the most part
Yeah.
and about how, lonely people will seek out any sort of connection, regardless of whether or not that connection is a positive one or a negative one.
Right.
Because ultimately, watching this film this time in particular, I was noticing that I was like, that the narrator finds what he needs in the first 10 minutes of this thing, but he doesn't see it.
Right.
He goes to a support group, he meets Bob, he meets a friend, somebody that will
Yeah.
love him and who he can love back, who he can create this relationship with. And yeah, it's based on a lie, but I don't think
Right.
Bob would hold that against him. You know, Bob
Yeah, not
feels
for long,
Bob
though.
is Bob is a is seems to be a man who's just so desperate that he really wants to make this connection. And then the narrator meets Marla Singer, who is another lonely, mixed up person who is kind of crazy about him.
Yeah.
And but he can't see her for what she is because she doesn't fit into what he wants or what he thinks he
Right.
wants because he's still wrapped up in his more corporate identity at the time.
Right.
But the thing is that if he had actually just said, well, I can actually form community with Bob and Marla, he would never need Tyler.
Right.
And none of them would never need Tyler. But all of them end up worse off running into
Right.
Tyler, including Marla, you know, who, although ironically, all the negative things she thinks are Tyler are about the narrator, but
Right.
which we'll get to. But imagine getting cock blocked by your own imaginary friend.
Right.
But yeah, the or to find out the woman that you think you is like, oh shit, I actually really like this girl, and she's like, you're an asshole. You're really nice to me
Right.
sometimes, and the nice one is the dickhead, toxic
Yeah.
asshole. You're the worst. You're the worst half of that for her. What a concept. But no, that's what I look at. Is I'm looking at this. I'm going, well, the narrator kind of does find everything he needs, beginning, and
Right.
then he doesn't follow up on it. But I mean, it's all about that. But I mean, I think Polonick won, and Mark did mention that Polonick himself had stated that he wanted to write books for lonely people,
Right.
and about loneliness and about finding connection. And
Right.
but obviously this book is also, this story is also very much about how cults form, why people join them, and why people are willing to throw themselves so completely into them, to the point that ordinary people who would probably never choose to hurt anybody are blowing up buildings.
Right.
You know, although maybe some of them would, but one of the points I found, especially with the film, was that even the other Project Mayhem people aren't particularly nasty people. Like, we don't get the impression any of them are like criminals or
Right.
rapists or whatever. They are, you know, they're the
I guess in
maitre
the
d'
back
of a,
cult. Yeah.
yeah, they're it's a guy who works at a food court in the mall. It's a guy who works in the mail room. It's a
Right. And it's always
bartender.
people who in the positions that, you know, are usually not noticed by society. You know, it's
Yeah.
just
Oh yeah, they're all service industry workers. They're
right.
all, you know, as Tyler puts it, when they're attacking the commissioner, police commissioner,
Right.
he's like, "We are, we, you know, we remove your trash. We,
Right.
you know, we cook your meals.
Guard you
We
while you sleep.
guard
Yeah.
you while you sleep. Don't fuck with us. You know,
Yeah.
we are the service class, and you don't see that. We are
Yeah,
invisible
and
to
that's
you."
one thing that annoyed me in the film was that and it still does to this day, that when and I know why it's there, and I know narratively it needs to be there because, you know, economy of storytelling, like, but like when he goes to the police and the police are part of, you know, Project Mayhem, and I'm like, come
Yeah.
on, not cops,
Yeah. Yeah.
cops get to beat people whatever the fuck they want. They don't need this
Yeah.
cult,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah. But that's what I mean, is I like the idea of, I was watching the movie going like, well, you know, it's, I was actually wondering if it was the opposite. It was kind of like, you know, I would almost feel like cops would just willingly go ahead with this, but
Right.
because, you know, any movie that does suggest that cops would be on the up and up, it always makes me laugh. But
Right.
no, you're right. That scene is always a little odd. It comes out
Yeah.
of nowhere.
And it's in the
To,
book too. So I mean it's, you know.
yeah. That
Like
Project
it's actually
Mayhem is,
like this is actually a really straightforward, you know, adaptation of the book, and it's
yeah.
like, you know, almost to the letter. You know, it's kind of remarkable how close they got to the book.
Yeah, other than and adding a touch more sympathy, I think, to some of the
Right.
characters. You know, even the narrator, I remember when I read the book, and which I it's been 20 something years since I've read the book.
Right.
I remember the narrator not feeling as sympathetic as Edward Norton feels in the
Yeah.
picture.
And they don't really flesh out, you know, any of the, I don't know what you want to call them, the Mayhemers,
The
or
space
anything like that.
monkeys,
Yeah, the Space
yeah.
Monkeys. They don't really flesh any of them out other than Bob, which is fine because, you know, Bob
Yeah.
needs to be fleshed out. You need to know about him to care when he dies and you know, when he gets his name back or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, his death is the impetus for the narrator changing his mind, really changing his mind. He's already doubting, but when they show up with Bob's corpse is when he says, "This is nonsense. Like we're well past the point of reason at this stage, and I want out."
Yeah, and he starts to feel that way even when, Bob just joins. Like he's like, he helps them join and, helps them, no, this is a test. Just stay out here on the porch for 3 days. You'll be fine. But he's also, you can also tell that he's like starting to question, things a little bit when Bob joins up because, he cares about Bob and he doesn't care about all these other, space monkeys.
No, they don't really matter to him. I mean, the narrator has a very select level of empathy, in the film, at the very least, that, there are the people that he cares about, but like he isn't so interested in. One of the things I remember is different though, is in the book, doesn't this that when the movie says, has Tyler Durden say there's nobody that's gonna die when we blow up these buildings. The book, he's like, no, there's people who are absolutely in those buildings, right? I
In the
don't
book,
remember.
he's just they don't really deal with that. In the book, it's they're going to blow up the tallest building in the world. It's not a credit card company
Oh,
because,
really? Okay.
no, it's just they're this is the biggest thing man's ever built. Let's fucking tear it down. It's
Okay.
just part of their it's a symbolic act of them trying to destroy society.
Okay. I wish they had kept that in the movie, because actually the
Yeah,
blowing
because the
the
credit card thing doesn't make sense,
it, that and I'm kind of on board. Like well, why the credit card companies? Well, if we released, destroy the debt record, we all go back to zero. I'm like, actually, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, but that's not how it works. I mean, that's
No,
never been how it
no.
works.
But no, I can, but
In
the
pre-computer age, but
yeah. But if you, but I'm actually on board with the
oh,
elimination
for
of
sure.
debt. Yeah.
Right.
Let's bring everybody back to
That's
zero
another
and
point where like, you're like, yes, this movie gets me, and then but it's like, oh no.
Yeah. But I don't
Movies.
support blowing up multiple buildings. Right. But I kind of am on board with the with economic equilibrium, as Tyler calls it. And I'm kind of like, yeah, that sounds good. That when everyone's like running to go, like, I'm gonna go like stop the bombs, I'm like, well, I don't know. I think I'd just get out of
If
town.
money is meaningless, shouldn't debt be meaningless as well,
Yeah.
But
Well, I mean, it is meaningless.
right.
In real world, it's something we made up. But in fact, I took a class in early American literature and was reading, I think it was Jefferson, who had written, who came up with the idea of credit. And my professor was like, you can thank him for that, and she was another one that was, she's basically was, a socialist at heart, and was like, that all of this kind of
God
stems
bless.
from this asshole being like, hey, what if we did credit, and the world was never the same. But no, that's what I mean, is I'm like, it's again one of those things that I'm kind of like, actually, I'm kind of on board with the this plan. Like, it's actually not a bad plan.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like all the things he's railing against are things that are actual problems and actually deserve to be railed against. And it's kind of like, if you start talking to one of those MRA people or a Proud Boy or something that if you start talking to them just about like what the problems of the world are, you could talk to them for a while and all this and not get that they're monsters, like you could because they were like, oh, capitalism sucks. Like, yeah, I'm with you, and this fucking the justice system is shit. It's like, yeah, I'm with you, and then they're like, they take a turn all of a sudden to and it's all women's fault. It's like, what?
It's yeah.
Coming in,
Yeah. I hate the yeah, I hate the
it's
Jews.
because of
Like,
pronouns in video games,
It's all about minorities and no, and that's what I mean,
And
is
that's
that
how the
like
cult people get you. It's the Alex Jones thing where Alex Jones is, yelling about things that are really a problem with, people being, reduced to statistics and whatnot, but he puts it as the problem, as the fault of like this shadowy cabal of Jews. And it's like, what?
Right.
No,
It's not
that's
them. Yeah.
right.
If there were, if that were true, then there wouldn't be as much anti-Semitism.
Right.
If they were really controlling things, they we probably wouldn't know about it. It's and people probably wouldn't hate them. There'd probably be way more propaganda in their favor if that were the case. But chances are, if some asshole on the internet can crack the code, there wasn't a code to begin with. If the dumbest person in the world figures it out, then it was never anything to figure out in the first place. And
And
flat
that's something with
earthers,
the book never, the book to its credit never goes in that direction, and it really easily could have, because this is a very nihilistic and, a dark book. And they could have had, Tyler go to that extreme, or, be that, misogynist or racist or anti-Semitic or any number of those things that, the real world people
There's a
tend to,
yeah, there's a few hints of misogyny. But
Right, there's misogyny like
yeah.
in the broad sense. And the way Marla is treated in both the book and the movie is, reprehensible. And why she sticks around at the end, I don't know.
Well, I
Especially
mean,
in the book, because of the book, like at the end of the book, like she shows up, after the narrator has figured out everything, about him being Tyler Durden and whatnot. And like she shows up with a black eye saying, don't ever fucking hit me again. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait. What the fuck?
the movie never went to that extreme.
Right.
There's some suggestion that Tyler certainly mistreats her, but there,
Right.
that's it's it, the movie more suggests it's all emotional.
Right. And yeah, it's like Tyler treats her like shit and like, like she's nothing. And then the narrator treats her most of the time, as an annoyance.
An interruption. I mean, I guess that's a good segue. I mean, rather than beating the same anti-men's rights drum for 90 minutes. But Marla, let's talk about Marla. Obviously she's played here by Helena Bonham Carter, who by the way, I hate doing this every week because I feel like it's kind of male gazey, but like it just so happens these are coming up. But I think this is the most beautiful Helena Bonham Carter's ever looked in a movie. I'm down. I'm into Marla Singer, and even though she's a mess, but this time around in particular, watching it, I was really moved by her. Where I was like, my heart kind of breaks for Marla Singer.
She's just so damaged and so poorly treated, and
To watch it from the lens of knowing, obviously knowing the twist changes things, of course. But like, these moments where she's trying to connect with him as the narrator, and he's just being an absolute asshole to her, because in his head, of course, she's sleeping with his best friend. And he's not aware of how much he actually cares about her until, he thinks he's just he thinks he's jealous of her for being with Tyler, but in reality, the jealousy is more stemming towards Tyler. He's just not willing to admit that. But Helena Bonham Carter plays that wounded feeling so well that when he's mean to her, and of course, because we can watch it from that lens and know that, 5 minutes ago, he was treating her relatively well. And then she's like, "So you love me?" And he's like, "No, get the hell out of here." And it's like to think of it from her perspective and being like, 1 minute ago, this guy was fine. and now he's awful. And she's always like leaving in a huff, but she's gives those big wounded Helena Bonham Carter eyes every time. It's a brilliant performance. The
Yeah, it's
characters, of
probably it's my
course,
favorite performance of hers.
yeah, I think so.
I've
I think I agree
seen her
with
in a lot of
that.
things, and I think this is probably her best performance.
Yeah, it's surprisingly subtle too. It's almost as if she's using very little screen time to a lot of effect. It's and that's something to be celebrated, I think, that even though the script doesn't really want to give her much to do, and the book didn't want to give her much to do, but that's not what the story's about. But you know, Marla is objectified in this story. And what you're able to do is similarly with Tyler, it with Pitt playing him, is that she's able to, as a performer, able to give her more identity and emotional resonance than the printed page can do. Which is one of those rare occasions in which a bec well in this case it's not necessarily a rare occasion because Polonic's prose is first person limited, whereas the movie, even though it's still mostly first person, it's still an actor is able to kind of be like, well, I am internalizing this character and I can bring that out. Whereas the book, it's all from his perspective, so Marla's only in it as much as the narrator sees her. But it is an interesting dynamic for an actor to be able to take a side character and bring a lot of pathos to the screen. And yeah, she's wonderful.
In the hands of a lesser actor, like this role could have easily fallen into like a dark version of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. And this she imbues Marla with enough personality and enough humanity to like avoid that trap,
Yeah.
for the
No,
most part.
absolutely. Yeah, she could have been a yeah, it could have been like a Sylvia Plath caricature. But like and a lot of some of the most poignant scenes of her, like, enigmatic sadness are still played for laughs. But they're like when Tyler goes to save her from her suicide and she's yelling back at the police like she's infectious human waste. What a piece of shit that woman is. It's sad as hell. She's talking about herself. She's like, this is what I really think of who I am. And that she's reaching out to this one guy she met once, to that she took an interest in, as some way of avoiding the deep-seated suicidal pain that she's feeling. But she doesn't know how to actually articulate that, so she just kind of uses this sort of manic humor to illustrate how fundamentally sad she is. But it's still played
And
with
she's
that.
smart enough to, and she's smart enough to be a good foil for the narrator. I mean, in one of her first scenes, it's when the narrator is telling her off for being, a tourist in these groups, and she's like, I watched you practice this speech,
Yeah,
like just
her fake crying. And he's like, "Oh God, why are you doing this?" And she's like, "Why do you do it?" But yeah, it's just a it, but that's the thing, is that she also brings that competence at the beginning, and then it breaks her down. Because obviously she's with the wrong fucking person. The irony being, the narrator might have actually been a good fit for her before he becomes Tyler Durden. That maybe that relationship would have worked. I guess they're still together in the comic book continuation, which I thought was strange. But
Well, they're together at the end of the movie. I mean, they're together at the end of the book.
Yeah, I guess in theory. I mean, like the movie, I was like, I don't know if they're actually together, but I guess you can read it as a, although she does take his hand
I was gonna
as
say
the,
they're holding hands as the world explodes. As far as, edgy 90s romance, I think that's right there.
Yeah. By the way, you met me at a very strange time in my life has to be one of the best ending lines
Ending lines, yeah, for
I've ever
sure.
seen. Yeah, it's such a beautiful, beautiful ending. But yeah, I mean, Marla's just a great character, and
Right.
I don't know if she is in the book. It's like I said, it's been such a long time since I've read the book, but in the film,
She
she's
has more
giving,
agency
yeah.
in the film, and she has more personality in the film, and quite frankly, and I think the film is better than the book.
I agree.
And even I guess Chuck Palahniuk said in an interview that he thought this was better than the book. So that just could be him, being, an author and being self-deprecating,
Well, I mean, I don't think many authors do that, though.
No.
It's usually pretty rare for an author to celebrate the book, celebrate a film as being
Right.
stronger than their original material. The only other writer I can think of off the top of my head that ever did anything like that was Stephen King, and the
Agreed.
closest, and that's only in reference to The Mist, where he
Right.
had said the ending to The Mist was better than what I wrote. The highest compliment an author can give the film, which was the ending's so good I wish I thought of it.
Right.
I should have thought of this ending and I didn't. But yeah, I think Palahniuk did say it was better. But then he wrote the comic book continuation, which our friend Mark tells me was the impetus behind that was mostly in response to people not getting the movie.
Right, that makes sense.
I might as well do that. I told him I would Mark I Mark gave me permission to quote him because he couldn't make it.
Right.
But I'll read a little bit of what he said here, because I asked him about it, because I was like, I don't never knew there was a continuation till
Yeah, I
literally
knew there
tonight.
was one. I just never had any interest in reading it. Like, because Mike loves the story that seems pretty
So what Mark says the
watered
comic
down.
book is about, he says part two starts with Marla married to the narrator and they have a son. He's in therapy. The narrator is in therapy
Right.
and generally boring, but his therapist hypnotizes him to bring Tyler back out. The metaphorical gunshot to kill Tyler didn't work, and this brings his personality back. The therapist is a member of Project Mayhem. At first, Marla is excited to see Tyler emerging again, and they continue their affair, but then a bomb goes off, literally, and it's realized that Tyler is also in their son's head, and his imaginary friend taught him how to make the bomb to kill his parents. It gets pretty weird and often breaks the fourth wall, where Chuck is a character writing it and workshops it in a writer's group, and people continuously get upset and say how it's not the movie. Bob comes back as a zombie at one point. Chloe is revealed to have not died and having a different disease than she claims in the book and the movie. It gets really weird and does end with Armageddon. And then I asked him, I said, so. And I said, that's interesting, is it's more clear about how the story is a satire about toxic masculinity and cult mentality. Mark
Right.
says it beats you over the head with it at times. He then makes the cut. He also, Mark made the statement of, I've often joked that Tyler Durden is the 90s version of Alex DeLarge, which
Yeah.
is a great analogy to make.
Yeah.
Which is then when I said to Mark that I remember that Tyler was more. Way more of trash in the book. And he said and Mark says he's much more obviously trash in the book, in the sequel comics, as well as the short story prequel. The complaints Chuck gets as a character are often based around how he's writing Tyler, that the people in the
Right.
writers group are saying you're writing Tyler wrong. He then adds, Mark also mentioned a bit of trivia, which was part of the filming involved Norton and Pitt having different diets and exercise routines to make it look like Norton was fading away
Okay.
as a person, while Pitt was becoming the peak view of a man. And then just notes that he how much he loves the film, and
Right.
it's one of his favorite Fincher films. But Sorry you couldn't make it, Mark. But you are in the show in spirit in that
Yeah.
respect. So I think that's
And thank
really
you for your
interesting.
contribution. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting continuation, because that's what I mean when he said there's a continuation. Like, how the fuck do you do that? But yeah, I guess it sounds very much like Chuck Palahniuk being like, you guys seriously didn't get that Tyler is the bad guy, like, because he's pretty clearly the bad guy. But yes, I
And back
guess
in the
in the
day, I knew a bunch of people who read Chuck Palahniuk, and like I don't think 80% of them got what he was writing about. It kind of goes back to when we were talking, years and years ago about Blue Velvet. Like a lot of the people I know who, are into Blue Velvet, like don't really get it and think that like, Frank is a good guy and, just like
How?
they're edge lords. They just think they're, they're edge lords. I mean,
I mean, Frank is
I knew a lot of shitty people who had a lot of shitty, role models, back
Well,
in the
apparently.
day.
Yeah. I mean, it's but yeah, I mean, it's it, but I mean, I think that's an interesting continuation at any rate. But yeah, I mean, what else do you have in your notes? Do you have notes?
No, I didn't take
You
notes.
don't
I
need to,
just
you don't, any topic you want to, is there any topic you want to jump on?
well, we talked about how, the what the film means to people who are stupid.
Okay, sure.
I think we talked about that enough.
Agreed.
What about, the cultural impact of this film,
Oh yeah,
it's
okay.
this many years later. I mean,
What's your take on
it's
that? What
well,
changed with Fight Club?
I think people just like got a chance to sit with the film and think about the film and watch the film multiple times. And I feel like this is another movie that probably found its audience on home video more than anything else. Like we said, it made a profit. It did fairly well at the box office, but I think that's based solely on David Fincher's name, and just like, from the maker of Seven,
Yeah,
it's
and Brad Pitt.
right, and Brad
Yeah.
Pitt. Although I can't imagine the people who, know Brad Pitt from like, romantic leads would have thought of this film the first time they saw it. But I think it's fascinating that this film, has stuck around and is just as quoted and thought about today as it was ever.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I know exactly why it's stuck around, other than the fact that, like I said, I think it was very prescient in its take on society. And but the film is such a downer of a film, like it, but
Do you
at
think
the
it's a
same time
downer?
it is, and I think, and I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you why not. I think it's a very nihilistic film. I think it's a very dark film. I think it's bleak. But it never really wallows in it. It doesn't really like drag your face through the mud with it. So I don't think it's not like a downer in like, oh, I'm gonna watch this movie because I want to feel bad.
Right.
It's more of a it's everything about the film is negative. And it's a very down film, and but it never like really connects that way with you, I guess, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah, because it's a very upbeat movie, in the way it's presented. It's paced lightning quick. It has wonderful scenes that are like you said. I mean, the subtext of this whole thing is bleak as hell. Everything about it is negative. There are no real good people in this movie. Even Bob, they suggest, what we see of Bob is after being an asshole for 40 years, now he's paying for it. But yes, it is that, but also it's told in such a manic, madcap way that it's I get juiced by it. I'm like watching it,
Yeah,
man.
yeah,
Like
same here.
it's exciting, it's funny. It's incredibly kinetic. That even though like the one of the fun got one of the funniest scenes I think quite possibly ever, it's basically slapstick, is Edward Norton beating the shit out of himself in an office. Everything about that scene is awful. All right, he's fucking himself up, he's bleeding, he's throwing himself through glass, and he's implicating his boss, who never did anything wrong, by the way. His
He's just
boss
his
was
boss, and therefore
just
he's
his
an
boss.
asshole.
Yeah, he's just a capitalist guy who manages a company.
He's not even a capitalist. He's like middle management. He's nothing. You know, he's in the same boat as, our narrator
He's
is,
a yeah, he's a
basically.
remarkably boring man. And he's remarkable in the sense that there's nothing remarkable about him. But this asshole is just implicating him in a violent crime, in order to blackmail him. But the scene is very funny. I remember seeing this in theaters and people just being like blown away by it. And I'm blown away by it. I watched it every and when I watched it tonight, I was like, holy shit, this scene's incredible. But it is really, really quite upsetting if you think about it for a couple minutes. But the whole film is upsetting. It is a disquieting film, but it's so funny. And I think that's I think why Fight Club was a game changer, is I think it was almost like taking that John Waters, David Lynch, weird cinema and going mainstream with it. Like being like, we're gonna have name actors in this thing. It's gonna be weird as hell. Because this movie is weird. It doesn't feel weird now because things have changed. It doesn't feel as outlandish, but at the time, part of the reason why that was say why I thought this movie wasn't as successful to box office, because I don't think it was well reviewed. A lot of people didn't like this thing, and I think it was because, I mean, yes, over time that narr the conversation around it revolved around how it's portraying toxic
Violence.
masculinity, right? Where toxic men view it as a movie for them. People who are really against toxic men view it as a film for toxic men. In reality, it's neither. But I don't think the conversation was that at the time. I think at the time it came out, the conversation was, this thing's too fucking weird. Nobody's making sense of it. Is it funny? Is it a
A lot of people were
comedy?
turned off by the amount, by the violence, and just the, I mean.
Well, it's funny because that's one of the things that's different about watching it now in 2024 versus then, is that I'm way more aware of who Rob Bottin is. And so I'm watching this movie now saying, well, Rob Bottin is doing the makeup effects. And, oh, okay. Because there's all this gore, all this stuff. The scene in which Lou, the owner of the bar, comes down and beats the living hell out of Tyler. And Tyler like tackles him to the ground and starts like puking up blood on him. And, you don't know where I've been, Lou. You don't know where I've been. Like a guy literally throws up in a bucket. It's all of that. Again, the scene is funny. It's engaging. It's weird. It's almost like a hell yeah scene in a way at that point in the narrative, because again, we're still kind of with Tyler. That we're not thinking about it in any other terms but how Tyler is seeing it, which is it's a victory for him. And so it's a victory for us as the audience, but we're not really thinking that Lou, I mean, other than leaping to violence pretty quickly and clearly having a man who carries a gun with him, so clearly this guy's a criminal of some kind. Isn't really doing anything other than saying, hey, why are you all in my basement? This is my property. Like, what are you doing down here? But all of these scenes are undeniably weird. They're undeniably violent and strange. And I mean, like, and to my point, Robert Bottin, doing top-notch effects work, which it didn't even occur to me until I saw Rob Bottin's name, how good those effects are. But then watching it after, especially that Edward Norton scene too, where I'm like, yeah, okay, I get why Rob Bottin was tapped to do this thing because they wanted real aftermath of violence.
Right. Or the makeup of Jared Leto's character after he gets his face,
After his face,
taken in.
yeah, he gets his
Yeah, I
face smashed
mean,
in, yeah.
it's horrific, and it's slightly cartoony at the same time, but super re also realistic, and it's a prosthesis that Leto can talk and act through, which is not that easy when you're putting that much makeup on a person. I mean, his whole face has been changed, and
No, in fact, it's I think
it's
that
like, well, I
scene
think one
is,
cheekbone and one eye is about all this, his own face.
yeah, all he has is his voice in it when like one eye, yeah, and it's probably the best line read of Jared Leto's career. I'm gonna give him that. Of he was killed serving Project Mayhem, sir. He's so mad that his hero fucked up his face. Which why not? Why wouldn't he be? But yeah, it's a great line read from Leto. I do hate I threw up in my mouth a little
Hate the
bit,
guy,
but
yeah,
yeah, I
Good
hate
work is good
myself.
work,
Yeah, but yes, you're right. Good work is good work, regardless. And Leto is admittedly good in this film, what little of it he's in. Normally I would say any movie, and I said this to Mark, any movie that had Jared Leto in it automatically gets at least a half star reduction. But Fight Club is the exception. That I'm like, as we pointed out at the beginning, though, I mean, I literally forgot he was even in it until he showed up. And then I was like, oh, that's right, Jared Leto's in this. But he's also well cast in it. I mean, he's playing a character who's supposed to be beautiful. And
Yeah,
Jared
he's
Leto
a big
is. Yeah,
yeah.
and he is. I mean, I can't deny he's a good-looking man. And that's what brought him to the dance. I mean, My So-Called Life, Jordan Catalano was, part of the reason why that show was as successful as it was, or even though it wasn't that successful as a one season wonder, but the reason why it hit with a certain crowd was because he was a beautiful young man. And he is. And so that's what he's supposed to be playing. I want to shift gears and talk about the script because I think it's a great script.
Yeah, it is.
I forgot how much I quote this movie all the time and how I think about quotes from this movie, even though I don't even think I realize it's coming from that movie. But there are moments and lines of this film that, and there's too many to list. Like, I can't even give you an example off the top of my head, but how many lines just come out in everyday conversation. But
Yeah, it's like, I've been telling myself these last, 25 years, like, you are not your job. It's
you
just
were not your job. You were not your, yeah. Yeah. But the one that came to mind just now, the reason why I wanted to bring it up was that in when he's beating the hell out of Jared Leto, and he's like, I wanted to put a bullet between the eyes of every panda that wouldn't screw to save its species. I mean, what a line. And there are so many of them. The deadpan delivery of the narration from Ed Norton, delivering these lines that are very clever. And I know a lot of them come from Polonic, but I don't think all of them come from Polonic. But yeah, there are some absolutely wonderful line reads in Fight Club and some wonderful snippets of dialogue that come up. I love the haiku. By the way, that's one of the biggest laughs in this film for me too, is he's like, I would just write random haikus and send them to everybody in the office. He's just so far gone that he's just typing it out, like, and it's drones can leave, worker bees can fly away, the queen is their slave. I mean, I want to work in that office. I would if I got that email, I would think it was the funniest thing I'd ever read, but from some random guy. The single serving
Friends, yeah.
Friend thing is such an interesting way of looking at it. It's very
Oh, it's brilliant.
clever.
It's, yeah,
Yeah.
it's, I've never thought about the world
You never
in
think
that
about it
sense.
that way, but yeah, if you travel for work all the time, you know, it's everything is single serving. Yeah,
Right.
it's but yeah, it's there's just some wonderful writing happening.
Yeah.
I don't think much. I've never thought much upon, like I told this to Mark, that I must have read at least six of his novels 20 years ago. I don't
Right.
remember a thing about most of them. And
Yeah, that's, well, 20 years ago.
it was 20 years ago, but also it's just these books aren't that memorable.
Right.
I don't even remember what Invisible Monsters was about. And that's very rare for me,
Didn't read
because
that one,
usually,
so
yeah, I remember Choke relatively.
I only read this one in Choke, so.
Okay. I read Fight Club, Choke, Invisible Monsters, Lullaby, which I kind of sort of remember, and then Haunted, which I hated.
Okay.
And just vulgar, for vulgarity's sake. I found
Right.
Haunted to be very distasteful. Conceptually, again, a relatively smart idea about deconstruction of social dynamics. And Haunted
Right.
was about was the idea. It was a short story analogy, an anthology of short stories, but it was the idea that a group of people would go to a retreat to write, where they're locked in a building to write for a couple of weeks with plenty of food and plenty, and everything's fine. And then the idea would be that rather than write, they will degenerate into savages, and to the point where they are, the wraparound story that keeps popping up is they are making themselves more and more into fabricated victims, because when they get out, they can sell their story. Like a
Right.
guy's cutting off his own fingers so that he can claim he was tortured. They destroy the food supply so that they're starving, so when they get out, they can say they starved us, and they will be celebrities. They can sell their own fictional experience rather than actually write anything, which is clever. But
Yeah.
the stories themselves were very grotesque and not clever. One involved a man being disemboweled by a pool jet, where
Right.
it felt good to put his butt against the pool jet, and then the suction
Yeah,
pulls out.
that old
Yeah.
urban legend. Yeah.
Yeah. And is it an urban legend? I just thought
Yeah,
Bonnick made it
yeah.
up.
Nope.
No,
It's
it
a
was,
legend.
but it was just gross, and I didn't see any point
Right.
to it. But it was a clever, not clever idea, but the whole wraparound was a clever idea. But, it was at that point that I was like, I'm not going to read any more of this,
Right.
of Chuck Palahniuk. But I do remember Lullaby being okay. Choke was all right. Although it felt derivative. It's like, why, after you
Right.
write Fight Club, you can't just write Fight Club again. And
So
that's,
do you think that he's, kind of a one-note author?
I do. I feel a little bit badly about that, because I
Right.
think everything I've read about Chuck Palahniuk suggests he's probably a pretty cool guy.
Right.
Interesting background. I think he was a travel writer and a professional bodybuilder. Came out, I think, as gay shortly after writing Fight Club, I think.
Yeah,
But he
this
was,
yeah, he was
yeah.
not when this was
Yeah.
made.
Because he was married and had kids. And then
Right.
he and so Bob was sort of based on him in some ways.
Right.
And everything I've read about how he interacts with people who are fans of his seems really nice. But yeah, I do think that, he wrote Fight Club, and then he wrote Fight Club again,
Right.
and then he wrote Fight Club again. And so there is that. But I do think, again, it's been a long time since I've read Fight Club. Right, so, I mean, you kind of talked about it a little bit, but you just listened to the audiobook. What do you think of Fight Club, the book?
I like it not as much as the movie. It's like I said, it's very, very, very close to the movie. But the movie's just got a certain, style and, sheen to it that elevates the material past past where the book was. What do you want, puppy? Hi. Oh, the dog has to check it on me. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Go lay down. Go lay down. Yeah, lay. Yeah, we have a bed in this room too. So for the
No.
dog. It's not just
Okay.
the card table and two folded chairs. It's the card table, two folding chairs, and a dog bed.
There you go.
It's
Are you guys
homie.
still like living in the house, or are you staying somewhere else?
Yeah, we're
Oh,
living in the
okay.
house. This is just the living room and the dining room that are empty.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So there's still the bedroom and Jen's office and the kitchen and stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's not the whole house, no.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah,
Because I
but yeah, I
it,
liked the
yeah.
sorry.
I was gonna say just like the sheer emptiness of the room behind you. I'm kind of like, are you just
Right,
like hanging
it's kind
out
of
here while
depressing.
Jen's at a hotel, or like what's going on?
Right.
But yeah, anyway, continue.
Yeah, so I like the book, but it's not as good as the movie. It's just
Yeah.
lot of the stuff, the cool, soliloquies that they give to Tyler are just, prose in the book. It's just so I think it loses something without, being put into Tyler's mouth. Because the book just kind of reads like it was written by him. And it was him and the narrator, wrote it.
Yeah.
The one thing I did find interesting that I found out today was that I guess when he was writing the book, he didn't know that, Tyler and the narrator were the same person until he was like two-thirds of the way through writing it. And then he realized that, they're acting as one unit, so he might as well just lean into that and make them, the same person.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it
That's
was kind of
interesting.
cool.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
as
I
far as movies go with twists, I think this is one of the strongest ones there is because it holds up so well and it's so well foreshadowed in subtle ways
Yeah.
going,
Yeah.
going throughout the thing. And it doesn't. We're going to talk about it soon. I don't know when exactly because we haven't really picked an order for these movies, but we're talking
Right.
about the Sixth Sense. And the Sixth Sense kind of loses something on a second watch.
Yeah, we'll talk about
I don't
that.
think,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think Fight Club does. I think
No.
it's just as fascinating every watch through than it was the first time. But the nature of a twist is you could only do that once. It only happens
Well, part of
one
the
time when you're watching the film,
to compare them, and obviously we'll revisit this when we talk about Sixth Sense, but part of the
Right.
problem with the Sixth Sense when rewatching it is that the twist doesn't actually make sense.
Right.
If
Even
you
if it
watch
does.
the film, a lot of stuff happens that doesn't
Couldn't, yeah.
track. You know, it doesn't, it can't work. There are some things in Fight Club that I think don't quite track, but they don't matter because Fight Club is playing in that sort of absurdist sandbox.
Right.
It's a deliberately a weird film, that it doesn't matter if Tyler, touches somebody else.
Right.
The
But there's also
logistics.
so many little touches of, foreshadowing that,
Yeah.
kind of counteract that. Even when they're on the bus, the one guy just bumps into Tyler and then he bumps into the narrator and he doesn't say anything when he bumps into Tyler. He says, excuse me, when he bumps into the narrator. It's just
Yeah.
little things,
Yeah.
little
Yeah.
touches or just,
But yeah, I think when you do watch Fight Club after, rewatching, when you rewatch Fight Club after, for a second time or what have you,
Right.
I do think it's one of the most obvious things. Once you see it, you'll see it
Yeah.
everywhere.
Right.
From the beginning, you're like, okay, yeah, he's
Right.
clearly the alter ego of the narrative, of the
Right.
narrator. Whereas the Sixth Sense, that's what I mean. If you go back and watch it from the beginning, it'd be like, well, there's nothing to really communicate that well that Bruce Willis is dead the whole time. Whereas, I mean, occasionally there are little things logistically that don't track. When you do watch it and try to be like, well, Tyler eventually, when he confronts the narrator and the two of them are talking, and he's like, sometimes you're watching me, sometimes you are me, sometimes you're you. But you're like, well, wait, when is what happening and when and why? But it doesn't matter. Like you
Right.
can look at it and be like, okay, but however, there are certain things that work better as a result of it, like the when the narrator is interacting with Project Mayhem and they're saying stuff like, the rumors are that he was born in an insane asylum and he
Right.
sleeps for only 1 hour a night. That's their way of justifying why their leader is a fucking weirdo lunatic.
Right.
Like they're like, he doesn't seem to sleep. He's two different people.
Don't mind me if you, I'm in Skidamarink right now. Go on.
In this house.
I'm letting the dog out.
Okay. But yeah.
He's about to bark if not.
No, it's all right. But yeah, it is one of those things that does work really well that you're like, or like we said with Marla, the way
Right.
Marla's interacting with him makes more sense and is all the more poignant when you know the twist.
Right.
That, she's been interacting with this guy who literally is two people. And so all of that works better. So I think where it might lose some energy as a result of logistical challenges, it's more than made up for by emotional resonance. And that's what the twist offers on rewatch. Whereas The Sixth Sense, it actually makes the film work a little less, I think. And we'll talk about that. Not to say that there aren't great things about The Sixth Sense, because there are. And I'm looking forward to that conversation because I think it's going to be a good one. Because I actually think The Sixth Sense is a great movie. But, and,
My recollection of it was that I wasn't that fond of it, but it'll be an interesting conversation regardless, because I haven't
well, I
watched it.
mean, yeah.
So,
Well, I don't want to get into it
there's a
anyway
lot
right
to
now,
it.
but yeah. There's a whole other conversation to be had about it. I'm going to do a whole episode on it, but yeah, I mean, to a degree with this twist ending, I do agree with you. I think the twist really works. And it doesn't take away from anything when you watch it again. In fact, it adds a different layer. Speaking of other things I noticed this time around versus other times, is this tonight was the first time I noticed in the when Bob is brought in, he's dead. The guy at the end of the table with glasses is the priest from earlier.
Oh yeah, no shit.
It's the guy, the guy starts a fight with him and the priest hits him
Well,
and
that's
they
how
have that comedy
they
scene.
were trying to, yeah.
They must have recruited him. Yeah,
Yeah,
because
well,
he's there.
in the book, it's more obvious that this was a recruitment tool. You have to start a fight and you have to lose. Like, you give the other guy the feeling of victory for once, and then you can bring him into
Bring him into the fight
the
club.
cult. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's there in the film. The subtle irony of, the first two rules of Fight Club. I don't talk about Fight Club. But then the last rule is if it's your first night at Fight Club, you have to fight. I mean, like, well, how that rule is redundant. If nobody talks about Fight Club, then there's nobody to have a first night at Fight Club. But the entire idea is the reason why he uses that rule as first rule and then second rule, where he reiterates the rule, is because he knows they're going to break it and they're going to bring more people in. And there's more recruitment. It's all the more sinister for that reason. What I did note also notice this time around in terms of Pitt's performance is that, and again, I think it's part of the reason why the film has a tendency to get misinterpreted, is Pitt is playing a certain level of sadness with Tyler Durden, in particularly the ending when the narrator is trying to get him to stop blowing up the building. Tyler says some textbook abusive boyfriend stuff, but he says it with such like sadness, where he's like,
Like, for example.
he said when he's talking to him, and he says, "Look," he's like, "Have I ever let us down?" And he's like, "Look, I'm grateful to you for everything you've done for me." And then he's like, "Look, as usual, I'm going to pull us through this. Pull us through this.
Right.
I'm going to pull us through this, dragging you, kicking and screaming, and in the end, you will thank me. There is this feeling from Pitt that he's feeling a certain level of rejection. I think Pitt is defending the character as an actor in a way that gives him more juice, I think, than maybe
Right.
the book had. And it's a great performance. I think it's if I don't know if it's my favorite Brad Pitt performance, but it's up there. I might like Seven better as far as Brad Pitt performances, but I don't think of any other Brad Pitt performances off the top of my head that I like better than Tyler Durden.
Right.
Where does Tyler Durden rank for you on the Brad Pitt performance scale?
Oh, number one for sure. Like you said, Seven's a contender.
Yeah.
I really liked him in Inglourious Basterds, even though I think the film was a little bit too long. But
Yeah, I didn't
his
like that one.
performance in it was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this one's, my favorite of his.
I think it's Edward Norton's best.
Yeah,
I
for sure.
can't think of an Edward Norton film. Oh, okay, Primal
Right.
Fear. Did you ever see Primal Fear?
No,
It was like
no.
his star-making role for him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, great performance. It was one of it was like nobody had really ever heard of him until I think Primal Fear. But the premise of Primal Fear is that he's a young Brad Edward Norton plays a guy who is accused of murdering a priest. Young
Oh, okay.
man, yeah. And Richard Gere is the attorney who's defending him. And the whole I mean spoiler alert for Primal Fear, which of course is, 30 years old at this point, but
Right.
the twist is they end up finding out that Edward Norton's character starts to let on that he was molested by the priest, which is the reason why he killed him, and that he also he didn't kill him as much as his split personality killed him.
Right.
That he had another identity that he had created to deal with the abuse, and then the final twist at the end of the movie is when he gets away with it, then reveals to Richard Gere he made it all up. That he played Gere from the beginning. And it's a really chilling moment for this young man to be like, oh no, I'm just a stone cold fucking killer. But thanks for helping me get away with it.
Right.
But it's a great performance. But I mean, it's because he does play like innocent for most of the film. And then he turns on a dime at the end and is like, oh no, I'm a total psychopath.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But yeah, so I mean maybe there's that one. But no, I can't think of another movie that I particularly liked Edward Norton in as much as I did Fight Club.
Right.
There is this level, this a lot of levels to Norton's performance as the narrator, I think, that it goes back to that original idea that we're torn between Tyler and the narrator as sort of the protagonist of this film.
Right.
If this movie has a failing, it's that Pitt's too strong and Norton's too weak.
Yeah.
Which I think lends a little bit to the idea of like why it's so misinterpreted is that we can't help but see Tyler as the protagonist of the picture, even though he's not.
Right.
Although maybe he is, maybe he's the villain protagonist, but I mean the story's told from the narrator's perspective.
Right. Well, Tyler's
But
definitely the antagonist, but
yeah.
like I get it, like the perception of the film is definitely different for a lot of people.
Yeah. So anything else on Fight Club?
I think we covered just about everything I had in
Yeah.
mind.
I would give Chloe her sympathy bone, I think. If I were.
Yeah. All
Yeah.
right.
Yeah, I think she's
Didn't she have
she
AIDS?
I don't think so. It's cancer.
Oh, it's cancer. That's
Yeah,
right.
if she
I'm
had
sorry.
AIDS, I would not. Yes,
Yeah.
that, you know, yeah.
For some reason, it was my was always my perception that she had AIDS. Like, it's like, you know,
No, I think it's supposed to
yeah,
be
so sad.
cancer. I
Yeah.
think that
Okay.
that group was cancer, I think.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's
Right.
I just watched that scene and I always feel sad, and I'm always like, you know, poor Chloe.
Yeah.
I would be like, you know what, okay, let's do this. You
Right.
know, you're being pretty clear about what it is you want and what you need, and you know, clearly you're not looking for, you know, a relationship here or anything. You
Right.
just are, you know, like, I'm gonna die soon, like, can someone have sex with me? I'd probably be like, yeah, okay, let's do this. But
Right.
you know, I mean, she even points out, she's like, I've got all these aids, all of these things I can,
Right.
not aids, but like all these
Oh,
things
they're
that will
trying to
help. Yeah,
push her away from the microphone in the middle of it.
amyl nitrate.
Right.
And you know, pornographic movies and all this other stuff just
Right.
to help you. But I would be like, yeah, all right, let's just, you know, let's just
I
get
think, you know, one of the things I saw, like, a lot of people like talking about online, like about this film, was like that it was like homoerotic, and I don't really think that's true. But
No.
I don't see it. It's maybe it's autoerotic. But he's definitely into himself.
Yes, I mean, if you do consider the fact that Tyler Durden is not a real person, then yeah, it
Right.
can't be. But other than
But
that, I mean,
I think there's a lot of trappings of, like, you know, gay film culture and like hidden in there that, you know, like just the fact that, like, you can't really be open about like what you're doing and who you are, but like you see other people from this. Wow, that was loud. You see other people from the scene, and like, you know, you instantly like know, like, hey, you know, give them a wink or not, you know. And but I don't think it was necessarily homoerotic, though. You?
I would read it as such, I think. Yeah, I mean, to a
Okay.
degree. I mean, if you consider that Tyler Durden is not really a person and is actually just
Right.
part, then no, because obviously that's they're the one guy. But I do
Right.
think that the narrator and Tyler have a certain romantic connection. I mean, like, you know, even the narrator even refers to them as like Ozzie and Harriet, you know, like when
Right.
they're like, you know, fixing each other's clothes,
Yeah,
and
that's true.
you
Yeah.
know, the narrator's just hanging out in the room while Tyler's in the bath.
Right.
You know, there's a certain level of intimacy, I think, that occurs between the two of them you know, and also when you look at it from the idea of, like, you know, he's jealous of Marla because she's taking
Right.
Tyler from him. I mean, yes, is it they're friends? Yes. And I think that if you were to ask them if they were interested in each other like that, then no.
They'd be like,
But
no, right.
no, I mean, to a degree, what we're talking about is similar to what we were talking about with, like, Basic Instinct, which was, you know, you can't, a woman owning her sexuality ends up looking like, you know, slutty in 1993. You know, whatever. In the same sense that two men can't be friends on screen without being gay.
Right.
You know, so I
And there's a
mean,
certain amount of, like, you know, like there's so much male gaze on the way that Brad Pitt is shot
yeah.
that you know, it definitely, you know, lends itself to being seen as a little bit homoerotic because of
Yeah.
that.
And as the film progresses and Tyler becomes more and more antagonistic, he's way more flamboyantly dressed,
Right.
you know, to the point where at the end of the film he's wearing like a big fur coat. And
Right.
you know, what do you, I mean, I like the, I think it's interesting that too, he's got a shaved head after he comes back too, which is an
Yeah.
odd choice to make. You know, but he comes back looking completely different after he disappears
Right.
for a while. But no, I mean, so I think to a degree I can see it in either direction. I can see the homoerotic perspective,
Right.
that the two men have that relationship, but at the same time, part of that does stem, I think, from the idea that two men as friends, I mean, that we've it's been talked about. I don't know if we've talked about it, but it's been talked many times that in cinema, the way men are written and performed in cinema often is deliberately
Right.
subversion, sub trying to subvert that mentality. That if you have two men hug, they must be
Right.
Interested in each other, because that's how, you know, Hollywood looks at it, you know, that so I mean, I could see it from the other direction too, where it's like, well,
Right.
no, they're just friends who have a close relationship. That relationship doesn't, just because they're close doesn't necessarily, I mean, if you and I slept in the same bed, it
Right.
wouldn't be because we're interested in one another. It would just be we're at the same time, we're not repulsed by one another, that we
Right,
would,
right.
you know, be like, well, no, we absolutely could not be that close. You know, that's ridiculous. But
Yeah.
at the same time, you know, yes, if someone who didn't know us or what have you saw us in bed together, would they assume there was something
Right.
homoerotic going on? Maybe. But so I mean, I can see it from either direction. But yeah, I could see it. I'm watching it, you know, and this is written by a gay man,
Right.
so there is something to that, I think. But no, but also, as you pointed out at the beginning too, the entire premise is based on the idea that Tyler is what the narrator wishes he was.
Right.
So the you know, sex god figure of Tyler, could be read as a homoerotic fantasy, or
Yeah, I
it's
guess
a,
so. Yeah.
or it could be read as simply a desire to look like that, you know.
Right.
It's but the narrator, I mean, again, the narrator is established to be particularly, is to be straight, so
Right.
yeah. I mean, ultimately chooses Marla, you know.
Right.
He realizes he wants to be with Marla. So there is
Like
that.
that's the thing. Like, you know, the people who are saying like it's, you know, got homoerotic subtext is like who are like saying that like, you know, no, like, you know, they're boning. Yeah. You know, it's I'm like you're taking it a little too far
Oh
there. It's
no. If
not
there
there in
is,
the text or in the
oh
subtext or
if,
it's
no, if it
yeah.
to go to that extreme, no. They are definitely not actually actively
Right.
having any sort of relationship like that. But they are, but I could see the attraction, or latent
Right.
homoerotic subtext. But there's no explicit homoerotic subtext. You know, they are not having sex. Well, they can't be having sex. They're the same
Right.
guy, unless you count masturbation.
Yeah.
Which would be weird. That's a weird Fight Club fanfic right there, is like the narrator jerking off, but he
Don't
sees
give
it
them
as jerking
ideas.
off
Yeah.
Tyler Durden.
Don't give the
That's
internet ideas.
Fight Club
Yeah.
4, I guess, when
Right.
Buck
Yeah.
Palahniuk writes that. But I think on that note, we've now officially gotten too punchy.
Right.
So anything else you want to bring up on Fight Club before we wrap up?
The only other thing was that this time I was watching it, I never realized, or I never remembered at least, that the scars on their hands are Brad Pitt's lips. You know, it's
Yeah. Well, the book calls it Tyler's Kiss, right? Yeah. And
And you know,
Marla has one in the book, right?
right, yeah, like
Yeah.
everybody has one in the books,
Everyone has
like
one.
Marla has one, yeah, like all the space monkeys do, you know. But that was
Yeah.
interesting. Like I didn't never made that assumption. Like for some reason, every time I thought of it, like I always thought it was more like China, but I thought they were trying to say something there, but yeah, I don't
Yeah,
know.
no, that's which would that would actually also lend a little bit of credence to the homoerotic subtext, is
Right.
you know, even in that scene, is when Tyler, you know, does kiss his hand. You know, there is a moment that crosses the narrator's face of what are you doing, and
Right.
am I into it?
All right.
You know, it's you know, there is a little bit to that. You know, he's kind of confused by it, but he's not exactly repulsed. He's kind of like, all
Right.
right, maybe we're going somewhere weird, and I don't, maybe I'm okay into it. And then he's like, well, this is a chemical burn, and we're done with that.
Right.
Wonderful scene though, by the way.
Yeah.
I love, there are certain moments in this film that there's actually been the only two, that are very weird in the sense of how sinister they are. It's actually the first time they punch each other in the parking lot. When Tyler says, "No, that was great," and punches him in the stomach, and the soundtrack drops out. Genius. And then the heartbeat, and you're like, it's such a sinister moment, of it challenging that of Tyler challenging that that boundary. But then the other one is the chemical burn scene, is Tyler's at his most frightening in that scene. And then I would say actually the what, okay, one last bit, one last question. What gets the biggest laugh out of you in Fight Club?
This time through, it was when they were trying to steal the fat from the clinic.
That's a good
That
one.
whole sequence where they're, trying, they're jumping over the barbed wire and Norton's like not very good at it, and then they get the bag caught on the barbed wire on the way out. And it's just those slapstick. It's like a Three Stooges routine with two Stooges. It's pretty great.
It is pretty good. Yeah. Mine is it's in their final fight. Every time it makes me laugh. It's the shoe is funny, first of all. He pulls the shoe off and starts hitting him with it. It feels very much like improv. But then the he chases him across the truck, and the narrator pulls out what looks like to be a little like antenna. Like a little
Yeah,
piece
like
of
an antenna
wire,
off the.
and when he starts whacking him in the face, and he just goes, "What?" It makes me laugh every time because it's such a weird reaction. But he's like, "What?" But he's sitting here with that thing. It makes me just absolutely double over laughing every single time. It's there are some wonderful comic moments from Brad Pitt in this movie that are very funny. Norton too. And neither one of them are particularly known for being funny. So it's pretty great that they are able to be funny in this movie without damaging the gravity of their characters.
Especially Norton, because I've always heard that he's a difficult actor and he takes himself way too seriously. But to be able to do pretty good comedy in this, it speaks to him as an actor.
No, I agree. I mean, yeah, he takes him, he supposedly took himself too seriously. I mean, that's why he ended up not being the Hulk at the end of the day. You know, he was cast to be Marvel Universe's Hulk, and then apparently he was just like, I'm way too serious an actor to do the humor of this. And I, well, let's go get Mark Ruffalo.
Far better choice.
Yeah, and Ruffalo will have a lot of fun with it, and which is what he did. But but yeah, I mean, go back and watch that first Avengers movie. Which, by the way, if you are out there and you are like many of us and are kind of like about the MCU at this point, go back and watch the Avengers.
Oh
It's
yeah, the Avengers is
it's
fucking
really
slaps.
good. Yeah, it's really good. But yeah, and a large part of it is because of Mark Ruffalo. But
It's
yeah,
just
it's
so
a
well put together too. It's just like they, bringing all these disparate characters into the narrative, like could have just like made a film that feels like four different films, and it does. It meshes so perfectly.
Yeah, it could have been like Avengers Endgame.
It makes me sad that Joss Whedon died, years ago, and never got anything else from him.
Yeah, he never worked again.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, anything else on Fight Club before we wrap up?
No, I
I
think
think
we're good.
we went long with this one, so
It's a
yeah,
fucking phenomenal film.
it's a great movie, and it really
If
is
you haven't
probably in
seen it
my
in a
top
while,
10.
go watch it. You had mentioned that it'd be your dream come true of somebody who said they were watching a film to prepare for this,
Yeah.
to prepare to listen to our episode. But I agree with you. But if you haven't and you're listening to this, go watch it again.
Yeah.
It's been too long. You've been away too long. Go watch it
Yeah.
again.
Yeah. No, really, it's a pretty extraordinary piece of cinema. Yeah. I
It's
really love
one of
it.
my is on my short list of, near perfect films.
Yeah,
But anyways,
I agree.
I'll take us out, I guess. Thank you guys for listening. We always appreciate you. Watch out for one another. It's not as bleak as Fight Club out there, but it could be anytime soon. As I like to say, be kind, rewind, but always be kind. Thanks.
Slide.
Slide.